Thank you so much, Peter. Thanks for choosing all those songs. Thanks especially for choosing that last song by Vicky Beeching. I'm reading Vicky Beeching's biography at the moment called Undivided, which I won't say anything about, but I would encourage anyone in our church to read this biography. There's many churches across our land no longer sings Vicky Beeching songs. And if you want to know why, then you've got to read her biography called Undivided. So thank you for choosing that song. I've been thinking quite a lot about her this week. We're in Lent, and I think we're starting the fifth week of Lent, so probably is the fourth Sunday. I was wrong, Peter. And we're going through this series where we're thinking about following Jesus as the Good Shepherd. So I want to do the fifth one today, looking at reconciled and reconciling, but I'm going to go back to the beginning and touch a little bit on lost and found. Graham Micheljohn kicked this series off several weeks ago, and he did refer to that. He concentrated more on the prodigal son, story of the prodigal son. I want to just go back to that and look at one of those other lost things in that story. But I want to talk today about the importance of finding lost people. That's really my heart of what I want to share today. Why is that important? To find lost people. People who've wandered away from Jesus. That's where we want to go in this series. When I grew up, there were basically, in the church that I grew up in anyway, two groups of people in this world. There were the people who were following Jesus as the Good Shepherd, and there were people who were rejecting Jesus, and there was no middle ground. You were either following or you were rejecting. As I've grown in my own life and in ministry, I've realized that there's a third category of people in this world, and it's this. People who are lost or wandering from Jesus. It's not quite as straightforward to put everyone in a rejecting and a following camp. And actually, I've found more people in this middle camp than in either of the other two camps. Many of the people that I've encountered in my life, and particularly since coming back to Scotland 7 years ago, would be in that camp, who feel a sense of lostness or wandering. I know I refer a lot to our weekly care and share ministry, our food bank. And I really wish more of you had the time to come. I know some of you who aren't working can pop in on a Thursday. If you are ever off on a Thursday, please pop in between 11:30 and 2:00. Even if it's just to serve tea and coffee and help behind the scenes, even if you're not comfortable talking to people or listening to their stories. But week after week after week, I hear these kinds of stories. It's very subtle. Sometimes it's not that people will come and they'll talk about how they're wandering from Jesus. They won't use that kind of language. But when you say words like, how did you get into this situation? How did you get into this need where you've come to a food bank or where you feel so lost and empty and hopeless and helpless? Many, many, many people will start talking about growing up in a church background or a religious background. Not all will be Christian, but they left it gradually for all kinds of reasons. Some will talk about grandparents who read the Bible to them. Some will talk about growing up in Sunday school. Some will talk much more personally that they actually attended church. But when they hit the teenage years, around about 15, 16, that's when they started to wander away. And it's fascinating to hear so many stories. I can't prove this, and maybe some of you know some statistics that could back this up, but I don't know them. But I could almost guarantee if you went down to Shawlands and had a clipboard, and you asked people in Shawlands, I'm only saying Shawlands because that's a busy shopping area, if you just said to people, did you ever go to church? And what do you think about it? I could almost guarantee that most people you will speak to will say, yes, I did at one time. Very few people will actually completely reject church and Christianity. Most people are ambivalent. They're in the middle. They've had experience, they've had a taste of it, but for one reason or another, they've wandered away from it. And they're kind of in this no man's land, where they're not completely rejecting, and they're certainly not following, but they could go either way. I remember when I came back to Scotland that first year, and as many of you know, it was a tough year for me. I went through to this conference in Edinburgh, and a guy called Carl Martin was speaking, who pastors a large church called Central Church in Edinburgh, a big Baptist church. And Carl told me, shared with me the story of Napoleon's army. He said, "Don, don't forget the story of Napoleon's army." I said, "Tell me, Carl." He said, "Well, it might be fictitious, but," he said, "I've heard this from a number of sources. Apparently, Napoleon's army could be divided into three categories. There were the people in Napoleon's army who would die for him, no matter what he told them to do, even if it meant they were going to go into battle and lose their lives, they would go. They would die for Napoleon. There were the people who hated him, who were in the army but were looking for the chance to abandon him, to kill him, to conspire against him, to mutiny. They would never, ever, ever support Napoleon, and they were looking for every chance possible to get rid of him as their leader. And then he said there was a big group of soldiers in the middle. They could be swayed either way. If they heard the right message, they were encouraged the right way, they would go with the first group. They would go into battle with him, and they would die for him. But if they could be swayed by the other group, they could go against him. He said, "Don, every church has three groups of people. The church worldwide has three groups of people." He said, "There will be people who will die for you. There will be people who want to kill you." And if you don't believe me, well, talk to me sometime, okay, or any pastor. "And there'll be people in the middle that sometimes will be with you, and sometimes they're not with you. They could be swayed one or the other. Concentrate on those people. Concentrate on the people in the middle. Spend time with them. Listen to them. Sometimes they got legitimate concerns, and by you listening to them, you can help to bring them on board and carry them in the vision of the church. Don't waste your time with the third group of people," he said, "because they have no intention of ever supporting you. Don't waste your time." I run a couple of little discipleship groups during the week, and one of my favorite ones is now in Farhad's house. Used to be in another home, but one of our Iranians moved on and has gone to work down in England. So we meet in Farhad's house now, and there are four of us. So we had a study this week, and we're going through the book of Acts. And Mohammed, who comes to that study, said, "Don, why do you not read of any atheists in the New Testament? You say you read about people who follow Jesus, and you read about religious people and God-fearing people, but you don't seem to read about atheists." And when Paul and Peter and the first disciples went out to share the gospel, the good news, you never hear them talking to atheists. I said, because there were atheists, trust me, but they didn't waste their time with them because they're not interested. You see, they concentrated on the people who they knew would be open to the message. When you read the book of Acts, almost every single place that Paul and Barnabas and Silas and Timothy and all these other disciples went to was Jewish synagogues. When they went to a new city, where did they go to? The Jewish synagogue. Why? Because there would be sympathetic people there who knew the Bible and knew the story of God's message in the Bible and would at least listen to them. And I'm saying this all today because I believe there are many people in our society, there are many people in your workplace, there are many people in your street who would fall into this category. And if we can only be open to God, open to the Good Shepherd, and get to know some of these people, okay? Maybe it could be, you know, inviting them over for a coffee. You maybe don't know they're in that category. You have no idea, okay, till you actually get alongside them and start chatting. But once you find people in this category who are in the middle, who are open And there's things that have happened in their lives. I would really encourage all of us to just to seek God for his guidance in that. I know at least one family in the church who are smiling at the moment are happy about this next slide. This is Robert Robinson, very handsome man, as you can see. That was a sketch drawing of him from 1700s. Robert Robinson was a Methodist, pastor, and a hymn writer. And he wrote the song, Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing. And we sing that song in our church sometimes. And every time we sing it, there's a couple of lines that always, always, always strike me. In verse 3, this is the line that I always feel when I'm singing it. Prone to wander, Lord, I feel it. Prone to leave the God I love. Do you ever sense that? Maybe you're not like me. Maybe you never, ever, ever have any difficulties in your life. Maybe you never have any doubts or questions, and you just kind of float on following Jesus, no bother. Great. If that's you, wonderful. I'm not like that. There's many times in my life, I confess, I feel like that. You feel this proneness to wander, and then you catch yourself and you go, why am I doing this? Why am I wandering? Why am I questioning? Where am I going here? Prone to leave the God I love. And this was a Christian who said this. This wasn't somebody who didn't believe in God. This was a pastor of a church who wrote this. And then in verse 4, he says, Jesus sought me when a stranger, wandering from the fold of God, he to rescue me from danger. What great words they came up with in those days, wasn't it? Interposed his precious blood. What does that mean? It simply means that when he feels like he's wandering from God, he remembers Jesus. He remembers the story of the Good Shepherd that we're going to read in just a second. And he remembers how Jesus sought him when he first was lost and found him. But he didn't just do it at the beginning. Jesus constantly seeks us. He constantly comes after us. He constantly finds us when we get lost in life and picks us up and brings us back and interposes his precious. In other words, he continually saves us and reconciles us. My question today is why? Why do we do this? Why are there people who wander? Why are there people who get lost? Why are there people who go to Sunday school and then wander away from it? Why are there people who don't go to church anymore, who used to go to church? Why are there people who said they believed in God and believed in Jesus, were maybe baptized or christened in the church or came into communion or came to services like ours, and they don't come anymore? Why? What happens so that people drift away? There's all kinds of things, but I want to share three with you today that I've experienced as I've talked to people in my life. First of all, doubts. Doubts creep in, and they normally start when you're a teenager. If you've grown up in church, and particularly if you've grown up in a church which is very black and white, where people say you got to believe this and you don't believe that, when you go off to school, and particularly university or college, you hear other people's points of view. You start to doubt, say, that sounds right. But I was told this. Now I'm hearing this. You start to question. You start to doubt what you grew up with. Sometimes you could watch something on TV or on the internet or on YouTube, or you can read something, or just hearing other people's points of view. Or you look at the world and you see all the suffering in the world and you see the injustice and you see particularly innocent children dying and you start to have doubts. Why, God? Why, God, is this happening? So doubts is the first thing that can cause us to wander away from our faith. But secondly, just distractions, just life, stuff of life, relationships. You meet someone and they don't really share your faith in God. You got a question, you got a decision to make. Am I going to go with my faith? Am I going to go with this person who doesn't really believe in God? And many times we can go that direction. Sometimes it's just the busyness of life, people's jobs, their careers, their finances, caring for elderly parents, the list is endless. All kinds of things can distract us from church. And what normally happens is something like this. One Sunday, you think, oh, I just can't face it today. I just can't go. And that's fine. I understand that. But if we're not careful, the one can turn into two, can turn into three, could turn into four, could turn into 1 month, could turn into 2 months, could lead to 6 months. And before we know it, slowly but surely but gradually, because of distractions, we just don't come to church. And then the third area that I again have seen in people's lives is what I would call deceptions. Kind of goes like this. But I can be a Christian without going to church. I don't have to come to church to believe in God. There's lots of people in life who believe in God, but they don't go to church. So I don't really need to go to church. I don't need to take this. I don't need to listen to sermons. I don't need to listen to songs. I don't certainly don't need to give my money to believe in God, do I? And we can be deceived and thinking, well, I can just have a faith and believe in God without church, and without Christians, and with all the stuff, without the stuff that go along with it. My experience over and over and over, as I've talked to people who think that way, is they lose their faith. They may say they still believe in God, but it's a different belief. They believe in a God. They would very seldom pray unless they get into trouble. They certainly wouldn't read the Bible anymore, and they wouldn't gather together with other Christians. Maybe Easter, maybe Christmas, if you're lucky. We can be deceived. We can think, I can do all this religious thing without church. And my experience is, it just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. And so, today, I'd like us to read Matthew 18, verses, particularly 10 to 14. But I want to read the first couple of verses of Matthew 18. So I'm going to read the first couple of verses, and then we'll jump to verse 10. So Matthew 18, Jesus is walking down the road on the way to Jerusalem with his disciples. And we read this. At that time, the disciples came to Jesus and asked him, who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? Just let me say, if you read this in Mark's gospel or Luke's gospel, you'll see they didn't just ask him a question. They were actually arguing with each other. Both Mark and Luke say the disciples were arguing with each other over who was the greatest. That's what was going on. And then they asked Jesus this question. Jesus called a little child and had him stand among them. And he said, I tell you the truth, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever humbles himself like this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Verse 5, whoever welcomes a little child like this in my name welcomes me. And down to verse 10, see that you do not look down on one of these little ones. For I tell you that their angels in heaven always see the face of my Father in heaven. What do you think? If a man owns 100 sheep and one of them wanders away, will he not leave the 99 on the hills and go to look for the one that wandered off? And if he finds it, I tell you the truth, he is happier about that one sheep than about the 99 that did not wander off. In the same way, your Father in heaven is not willing that any of these little ones should be lost. In this parable that Jesus tells, the author Matthew is very clever how he sets it out. Notice what he does. At the start and the end, verse 10 and verse 14, he talks about the little ones. And I'm going to mention them in just a moment. So that's who he's really talking about. And that's who he wants the disciples to understand. Then two times he talks about my Father in heaven, what he thinks of the little ones, and then my Father in heaven and what he thinks when we rescue one of the little ones. Talks about the 100 sheep, one gets lost, talks about the one sheep, and then the 99 who never strayed away. But in the middle of all this, this is what Jesus is trying to teach the disciples. He's trying to teach them the importance of leaving, sometimes leaving the 99, leaving our comfort zone, leaving our friends, leaving the ones who are in, and searching for the one who gets lost. Leaving the 99 and searching for the one who gets lost. You see, Jesus put this into practice, didn't he? Look at some of these verses. In Matthew 15, he says, I was sent to the lost sheep of Israel. When Jesus came into our world, he came looking for lost people. And particularly from his own tribe, from his own people, from his own culture. He came to the people of Israel who were lost. In Matthew 9, Mark 6, it says, when he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. Jesus had compassion on people who were lost, who'd wandered away from their faith, wandered away from God, wandered away from the traditions of his people, and were looking for someone to lead them back to God. Many, many people that I encounter week after week and our care and share are looking for something. They maybe don't know or couldn't express what they're looking for, but when you start showing love, when you start listening, when you show compassion, when you give them the bags of food, or this week we bought, there's a guy who lives locally, lives in this area. He's been living for the last 6 or 7 months out of a microwave. His oven broke, his fridge broke, and his washing machine broke. You might say, well, why didn't he not get new ones? It's not as simple as that, folks. Not as simple as that. Why did he not just go to the housing association and tell them it's not as easy as that when these people are in chaotic lives? So on your behalf, we got him a washing machine, we got him a fridge, and we got him an oven. And it was delivered on Friday afternoon to his house. And he sends this really, really nice message. Please say a huge thank you to the people of your church, Don. You've made my life. You've given me some hope again in my life. No, it's a washing machine. It's 3 appliances, okay? But it's more than appliances. And I want us to see this. When we reach out and help people with stuff, it's way more than stuff. You're actually offering that person a wee bit of hope. You're showing there's somebody that cares about you. Even when you can't get out of bed because of your depression, and pick up the phone and talk to the housing association. Even when you can't face sorting out these benefits that you think will never get sorted, there's somewhere, there's a group of people, and they open every Thursday, and you're always welcome. And they'll care about you, and they'll listen to you. Because underneath it all, these people are desperately lost. And many of them are religious. There's never been one person who's come on a Thursday that when we say, we'll pray for you, they say, oh, don't do that. Can I pray for you? Oh, no. I don't want you to do that for me. Everybody says, yes, please. I could do with all the help I can get. I think I've told you this story about a guy called David who stays nearby. And I've bumped into him from time to time. He came about 3 years ago. No job. Family had abandoned him. He was an alcoholic. He was taking medication for depression. He came into our food bank one day. We gave him some food. I said, can I pray for you? He said, I'll take all the help I can get, Don. He says, I'm not a religious guy, but he says, I would appreciate your prayers. So I prayed for him on the spot, and I said, I will pray for you, David. And we didn't see him for a few months, and he came back one day with several bags of food, and he gave them to Jeanette, and he says, that's for you. He says, I just want to thank you for helping me. He says, that day, something clicked inside me. And I know some of you have heard this story before. It's a great story. It's a great story. Something clicked, and he says, I'm better than this. These people are praying for me. If they believe in a God who can help me, I'm going to make some changes in my life. Eventually, he got off the drink. He got off the medication he was taking. He got a job. He was reconciled to his son who's now living with him. And he came back to give us something to show he appreciates it. Didn't just do that. He went into town to find somebody that he could help. This is so good and it's so funny. And he found a guy on Buchanan Street who was homeless, who looked hungry. He said, hey, can I buy your lunch? He said, yes, please. He said, come on, up you come. So he took him over to Greg's. The guy wouldn't go in. He said, wait there, I'll go get you some lunch. So he goes into Greg's and he buys him his lunch and he gives it out and he couldn't find him. He's looking one way and he's looking for the other. He said, where's this guy? I've just bought lunch. And he sees him coming around the corner with six other homeless people. Okay? I went, flipping heck. He didn't say that. He said something much worse than that. Okay? He says, I didn't think I would have to do that much to show God I appreciated what he did for me. So anyway, he wanted just to help somebody else. Why? Because he'd been helped. And this is the point today. When we read this story, who is this story about? Who is the shepherd who goes to find the sheep? In one sense, it's Jesus, but that is not who he is telling this for. At the beginning of this story, in Matthew 18, verse 1, the disciples were arguing. They were arguing over which one of them is the greatest. They were concerned about themselves more than others. They weren't thinking about lost people. They weren't thinking about people who'd wandered away. They weren't thinking about the Davids of this world or anybody else. They were thinking about themselves. And Jesus gets them and tells them this story to show them, you are the shepherds. You are the guys who find the sheep. Don't wait for God to do it. When you go and find that lost sheep, you are finding him. You are, if you want, Jesus to that person. You are God to that person. My question is, how are lost people going to get found unless we find them? You see, there's no point in sitting in our churches, and I'm going to get a bit close to the bone here, praying that God will find lost people while we don't make the slightest bit of effort to invite people over for a cup of tea. Or help someone that we see needs help. Or open our ears to listen to someone who's struggling. Never mind our mouths to say, I pray for you. If we don't do any of those things, sorry folks, you can pray till the end of your life or the end of the world. Lost people will not get found. And that's the point of this whole parable. This whole parable is not to reassure us that Jesus will find lost people. The whole point of this subversive parable is to say they will never be found unless we go. Unless we go. They will remain lost. They will continue to wander. And they will lose their lives unless we find them. That's the point of this story. As the Father has sent me, Jesus said, so I'm sending you. Going to skip all this bit to get to the bit at the end. A few weeks ago, I was speaking about the Good Shepherd. If you remember from John chapter 10, and I talked about these words. When we come into God's family, when Jesus finds us, we are secure. Remember I told the story about the guy, the man in our church, and when I became a Christian, he grabbed my hand and he grabbed my arm and he said, Jesus will never let you go, Don. You're safe, you're secure, Jesus has got you in his grip. And that's true. That is true. Jesus has me in his grip. We also read verse 10 where Jesus said, but the thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy. I have come that they may have life and life in all its fullness. On the one hand, we are in his grip. Jesus doesn't let us go. Jesus does see the lost sheep. Jesus is the shepherd. I'm not saying this parable, Jesus doesn't do that. He does do it. He found these disciples. They didn't find him. He found them. He went off and he found James and John and Peter and Andrew fishing. He says, leave your nets, come and follow me. I'll give you another mission in life. He goes off and he sees Nathanael sitting under a tree. He says, come, follow me. He finds Philip and all of these others. He finds them all. And then he says, come on, follow me. So Jesus found them. He went out of his way to find them and constantly was finding lost people, but he wants them to do it as well. And he won't let us go. But the other side to this is this. So I just want to, as I conclude today, to go through this parable and to tie it in with the parable that Graham used a few weeks ago in Luke chapter 15. On the other hand, yes, Jesus will hold us in his grip, but on the other hand, we wander. We get lost. We go off. We keep going. We go behind a few microphones and a drum kit and a keyboard and a guitar. We get in the corner and we hide. We become invisible. You can't see them anymore. And that's what Jesus was talking about when he talks about the little ones. In Greek, the word for little ones is micros, from which we get microscope or microcosm or microorganisms. What's a micro or a microbe? A micro is something so small the naked eye can't see it. That's what a micro is. And Jesus says there's lots of little ones in this world, but they get so tiny, you can't see them anymore. They're hiding. You got to look for them. You got to look really carefully for them. And that's what this parable, Jesus is saying we need to do. It's fine being part of the 100 sheep, fine being part of a group of disciples who are following Jesus or a little church of 100 people, but that's not what it's about, folks. This is great, but this is not our mission. We come together Sunday by Sunday to encourage each other, to build each other up, but this is not Christianity. This is a little bit of it, an important bit, but it's not all about this. You see, people wander. And in Matthew's version, he talks about the one who wanders away, but in Luke's version, it says he loses one. When Jesus loses a lost sheep, breaks his heart. He might be a microbe to us, but he's never a microbe to Jesus, because Jesus doesn't see with the naked eye. Jesus sees those little lost sheep. Jesus can see every lost sheep in our community. He sees every lost sheep in Hill Park. He sees every lost sheep in Pollockshaws. He sees every lost sheep in Newlands and all over our city. Sees them in your street, sees them in your community. He sees them. They're invisible to us, but he sees them. He cares about them. He says, I don't want to lose that one, but I need these people to be my shepherds. I need them to find them for me, because if they don't go out, they're never going to be found. So what does the shepherd do? He leaves the 99 on the hills. He leaves them. Sometimes we have to leave our comfort zone, leave the 99. In one sense, that's what we do every Sunday. When we walk out the front door or the back door or the side door, whatever, however you get out of the church or jump out the window every Sunday, we leave the 99. Why do we leave the 99? Because we don't care about them? No, we love each other, don't we? Okay, that's why we keep coming. But we leave the 99 every week and we go into a world where there's lost people. We have to. Because if we don't, if we stay here, this is not what it's all about. We leave the 99 on the hills and we go to look for the one and two and three that have wandered. Now look at the difference in these two versions. What does Matthew say? If he finds it. Matthew leaves an element of doubt. In Matthew's parable, the shepherd sometimes doesn't find the sheep. Sometimes little lost lambs stay lost and are never found. They're never found. They're never found. And if we don't recognize that, then we're deluded. Sometimes people are never get found. But in Luke's gospel, he says he goes after the lost sheep until he finds it. So Luke wants to emphasize Jesus doesn't give up, so nor should we. If Jesus doesn't give up on us, we don't give up on people, even when they don't want to be found, even when they're still hiding under that rock or whatever. We don't give up. We keep on looking. We keep on praying. And maybe today, as I'm speaking about this, there's someone here, and you're thinking of someone. You say, but Don, I've prayed for that person for years and years and years. Don't give up. Don't give up. Don't stop. Don't stop looking. Don't stop praying, because Jesus doesn't. He will find it. And then what happens? It says in Matthew's gospel, he's happier about finding that one than the 99. Luke is even better. He says he joyfully, look at the joy in Luke's story. He joyfully puts it on his shoulders and goes home. He calls his friends and neighbors to rejoice with him. Now for the controversial bit. In both of the stories, Jesus says, what brings God more joy? 99 sheep who don't wander, or one who wanders and gets found? What brings heaven more joy? It's the one, folks. It's the one who gets found. And I'm going to be really, really controversial as I finish this morning, so please either leave now or strap on your seatbelts, because this is going to be a bit uncomfortable. When I was first in Scotland, I got to meet this guy, Bill Hybels, who leads a church in Chicago called Willow Creek. Bill has got into a lot of bother in recent years, but that doesn't discredit or disqualify the many, many good things which Bill Hybels did. Bill Hybels said this, says, the needs of the seeker outweigh the needs of the saved. I heard him give that message many, many times. I heard him in Scotland, I heard him in England, I heard him in Canada, I heard him in America. The needs of the seeker outweigh the needs of the saved. I'm going to put it in two other ways. Evangelism and outreach for a church is more important than pastoral care of the flock. Now, I know there are people sitting here right now who are uncomfortable with that statement and want to challenge that statement. I am not saying pastoral care is unimportant. If I was saying that, I wouldn't be a pastor, folks. And I am a pastor first and foremost. But when we get more concerned about our needs than the needs of people who are lost and could be lost forever, there's something wrong with us. There's something wrong when Christians are more concerned about our little squabbles and the things between us than people who could be lost for eternity. What's more important to Jesus? What do these parables say is more important to God? Does it say God rejoices when the 99 stay in the sheep pen? And he's not so bothered when you find the one? No. It says there's more rejoicing in heaven over one person who's found. And again, I repeat, in case I get an email from someone tomorrow, I am not saying pastoral care is not important. It's very important. But it must always come secondary to finding and rescuing lost people. And as long as I'm your pastor, it will come secondary to me. Mission is more important than church government, membership, and doctrine. And as long as I'm your pastor, it will be more important to me. Not that those things aren't important, they are. But in my experience, when churches become introverted, become pre-obsessed with themselves and their needs and their doctrines and whether you've done this or that for everybody, we lose sight of broken people who are lost and helpless. May God have mercy on us. May God have mercy on us. I love Eugene Peterson's rendering of 1 John. With this, I close today. My dear friends, if you know people who have wandered off from God's truth, don't write them off. go after them. Get them back, and you will have rescued precious lives from destruction and prevented an epidemic of wandering away from God. As the worship team come up, I'm going to pray. They'll lead us in prayer just now. Come up, guys. And if God has spoken to you today, which I pray that he has, as he spoke to me when I was preparing this message, spoke to me very strongly and very forcefully and said, Don, do you care about the wandering ones? Do you really care about the lost people? Do you? God has spoken to you today. Maybe there's somebody right now on your heart. Maybe you've already given up on them. Jesus hasn't given up on them. Need to respond to that word today. Need to respond to what God has said to us. There may even be someone here today, and you are one of these little ones. You've wandered away from faith. You have wandered away from God. And today, as we've read this story, you realize that there's a good shepherd who loves you passionately, who has been searching for you for maybe years. And he says, I want to put you on my shoulders. I want to bring you back into my family because I love you. I died for you, and I will never give up on you. If you are that person or God has spoken to you today, then the prayer team are available to pray with you at the end of the service after we've sung this last song. Please don't go away. Just pray with someone today about these things. And just, or even right now in your own heart, say, Lord, help me this week to be available to find some little ones who've gone lost and wandered from you. In Jesus' name, amen.